It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Julie Perkins. This week's Fed Talk is going to focus on performance reviews. We're joined today by Ginny Gibson from Grant Thornton and Dr. Janice Presser from the Gabrielle Institute. Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you on 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. So I thought I would start it off by asking you both to introduce yourselves and explain a little bit about what you do. Ginny, do you want to start?
That would be great. Thanks, Julie. I'm Ginny Gibson. I'm a performance management expert with our Grant Thornton practice here in Washington, D.C., and we focus primarily on the federal sector. I've been in this world for many years, and have gotten into this evaluation process and into the performance management process because we're really looking at how we can help organizations do things better.
Okay, and Dr. J or Dr. Janice?
Okay, I'm Dr. Janice Presser. I'm CEO of the Gabrielle Institute and the chief developer of TeamAbility, which is a new technology that predicts how people will team together. And while I'm not an expert on performance review, or I don't consider myself one, I like to think of myself as providing the responsible opposing viewpoint.
Well, okay then, Janice.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll start off with, I think, what is a general consensus for both managers and employees. You know, why does everyone dread the annual or mid-year performance evaluations? Ginny, you want to start?
Well, gee, I think what we really see most often is that those processes are cumbersome. People don't really feel that there's value that they get from those conversations. There's often a negative connotation that's associated. And quite frankly, they're just not very helpful in helping you understand how to do better in the organization, how to do better in your job, and really how to grow as an individual. So I think those are some of the key factors, but realistically, they hate the paperwork. We do a lot of paperwork. We fill out a lot of forms. We check off a lot of boxes. And then what does that really mean? How about you, Janice? What do you think?
I found some numbers. This was interesting. This is a FedSmith survey, and they found 63% of the respondents, who were mostly non-managers, said they did not get adequate performance feedback during the year. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, that's the best study I found. There was another one with 80% of people saying, and these are our federal employees saying, I am not getting performance feedback. And I think it's just because managers don't like doing them, mm-hmm. and people don't like getting them. And as my lawyer friends like Julie say, you know, res ipsa loquitur, the thing speaks for itself. Something's got to be wrong about what we're doing.
Right.
And that's absolutely consistent. What we've seen in the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey, when we've seen what makes a federal agency a best place to work. If we look at the recent Grant Thornton survey of chief human capital officers that we just released, all of these things reinforce the fact that leadership, performance, and engagement are tied together and not necessarily functioning very well.
Right. And I think, we have often clients coming in saying they hadn't received a performance evaluation in 6 or 8 months, mm-hmm. or they get a new supervisor, they've been off on a detail. They just feel like they get sandbagged at the performance reviews by people that they don't think has the right knowledge to rate their performance. And in the government, it seems that it's all about your performance reviews when you apply for jobs. They always say, well, give us your last performance review. And when they don't think that they're being treated fairly in the process, I think that's where you get this disconnect and a lot of anger.
Yeah, performance reviews are always after the fact, and sometimes they're way after the fact. So they're very dependent on what the manager actually remembers about you.
Right.
And yet, when you think about it, some of the really best employees, the ones who take it seriously and do everything that they need to do and beyond, who play well with other people, who are giving, are actually quiet and self-effacing. And you almost have to go to them to ask them for what they know. And they just don't get noticed. So it's very easy for a manager to forget, even if you have the same manager for the whole years, which how many times do you end up with a change of manager and somebody who knows you for the past 3 weeks is expected to do a performance review of you, and the person who really knew you and knew what your value was is just not there to do it?
Yeah, it's funny you said that about the quiet employee at my first law firm when I was a young attorney. They didn't have annual performance reviews. Their thinking was, if there's a problem, we'll come to you. If there's no problem, we'll leave you alone, which isn't the best way, but it also speaks to the ones that are not causing the problems, they're assuming are doing a good job. It didn't help you grow as an employee, but it was a pretty direct, we're coming to you if you're not doing a good job. Otherwise, we're leaving you alone. A very, you knew where you stood.
But the missed opportunities for being able to nurture someone to something bigger, that's very sad. I mean, everybody has potential to grow in some way. Some people just get to be super experts in the job that they're doing, and other people are very ambitious and they could be the next leaders of agencies, but for some reason we miss them, and that leads to all kinds of choices that end people up in law firms actually saying, I've been overlooked. And we know historically that's been extremely true for women and minorities. And so, to get around that, the messaging needs to change.
Right. And those performance appraisals that are done in the federal system today often are really not done in a way that differentiates any type of achievement or capability. So one of the problems that they often have is 85 or 90 or 100% of people have a superior or an exceptional rating. Well, why? Because the process is in place to really address poor performance and nurture the correct type of performance aren't there. And I think, Janice, you're hitting on the thing that I think is really one of the key themes that you and I like to talk about when we debate this, is around the fact that, are we really trying to wait until something wrong is happening, or are we really trying, is it more effective for us to work to guide the employees to prepare for the right type of work that needs to be done and the right type of results? And I think we wait till there's a problem, and then it's a negative situation all around.
Mm-hmm. And I think also the federal government is all about process sometimes. When you're dealing with HR, with managers, this is the way we do it. This is the process. You can't deviate, because then people are going to complain. And so your managers, I think, are trapped in, well, this is how it's always going to be done. Don't do anything differently, or else, you know, that's on you. So they don't allow for any sort of innovative training or feedback to be provided.
Two things I hate: the people who put the no in innovation, and the people who do gotcha reviews. There's nothing worse than the highlight of your review being a gotcha, like something that you didn't know. You should be knowing about where are your opportunities, not just your opportunities to fulfill your job description, but where are your opportunities to go beyond, to take things to the next level. We can't stagnate. You know, we're really a very innovative nation. I mean, we were a startup not that long ago with some of the most creative, amazing things. Our Constitution is amazingly creative. It leaves room for growth. And when we don't do that for our own employees, what are we saying to them?
Right, right. Well, this has all been a nice start to, I think it's going to be a fascinating discussion. Right now, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And we'll continue this after this break and a word from our sponsor.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we're talking about performance reviews. Dr. Jenny, do you want to go
ahead? Yeah, actually, we wanted to talk a little bit about employee engagement. I think that was one of the topics we brought up earlier, and that it's really one of the most major of the major concerns that both chief human capital officers, chief financial officers, chief technology offers, risk officers, all of the executives in the federal government today are concerned about engagement, and they're looking for ways for senior leaders to transmit that commitment. So what we found in our recent survey of the chief human capital officers is that at most of the federal agencies, the senior leadership clearly understands the need and how to engage employees and to build that vision and that excitement and that commitment. What happens is as it gets translated through the organization, it diffuses a bit. And I think that becomes because those folks are really business folks working on the business of doing the government's job.
Right.
And that becomes lost in the translation. And so one of the things that the federal employees have said is we really want to see that commitment at the top drive all the way down to the organizational level to our supervisors. And I think if we can help our colleagues with that, we're going to be able to see some real change in the way the federal workforce responds and is engaged.
Absolutely. I'll tell you a little bit about the research. So I developed a technology that measures this, but prior to that, there were such a large number of years of research I'm really not supposed to say because then you'll know how old I really am, which is very old. And it turns out that if you think about how people really work together, you actually can increase their engagement. So the first thing is, are people doing the kind of day-to-day work that aligns strongly with the way in which they contribute? You know, kind of like your mission in life. And we found in these many, many years of research that there are actually 10 needs that all organizations, including governments, have. And that if you deeply want to give in this way, if we can just get you aligned with that kind of work, you're going to be much more engaged in it. So, for instance, how it's relevant very much that Jenny and I were talking about before is that there are people who are in management positions who really do not like what we think of as managing in the sense of
right.
nurturing people up. They'll do fine managing visionary projects with people who really don't need to be managed anyway. But on the entry level, the place where there's so much work to be done with the management of performance, so you're talking about first-line supervisors, if that's not really what you enjoy doing, you're probably in the wrong job. And so not only will you not be engaged, but the people who you're managing are going to become more and more disengaged because you aren't giving them that kind of feedback, that kind of nurturing, that kind of dreaming with them about what they can be in their future that they really need.
Right. And I think for those lower level managers, they're often selected because of their either their years of service or their subject matter expertise. And let's face it, it's an increase in pay. So who
yes.
wouldn't want to apply for that kind of job? and without consideration of how well they interact and mentor. And when they're placed in those positions, then they're not trained. They're just sort of left to flounder and deal with the dynamics of a workplace, which is very difficult, you know, to go from a peer to a boss or to come into a new workplace and be people's boss. Some people just don't have the skill sets. Now, some can learn, perhaps with training, but others, as you said, it's just not within their skill set at all.
Right. And it doesn't mean that you can't be a manager. People sometimes say to me, well, this is not my first CEO gig. They say, well, you know, you've been a CEO several times. You must like managing people. No, I don't. It's much easier when you're at the top because the people who report to you just don't need that very close management. So it's that fit between the person and what you expect them to do that's important. And there's actually two other factors I'll tell you quickly. One is that different types of positions have different levels of stress, things like ambiguity and things like that. And if you don't actually enjoy that, you know, the fun of the challenge, then it's probably not a good thing for you to do. And that's true in just about any job type. If you think about the law, litigators usually like the heart-pumping excitement mm-hmm. of getting up in front of a jury. But people who are very intellectual and love doing the analytical work are just as valuable.
Right.
It's just that they will fit better doing a different kind of work. And then there are all the cultural factors, or what we call teaming characteristics, that might make you a great fit in one set of circumstances. In government, that could be the mission of the agency might be much more aligned. The style of the leadership of that agency might be much more aligned with how you want to give. The closer you get that alignment, and Ginny knows this from how tons of years in mm-hmm. is being an HR expert, you just get more real engagement. The real stuff, not necessarily numbers reflected on a survey, mm-hmm. But what I like to think of is, you know, not just having your body at work. I want your heart. I want your mind. I want your very soul there. And that's that deep engagement that makes work fun.
Right. And what we have in the system right now is not a real way to help that be demonstrated. So we look at compensation systems in which they're very hierarchical. We look at performance managed systems in which they're retroactive. We look at development programs which are thrown to the wayside when budget cuts happen. And so those are the kinds of things when we look at the different aspects of the human resources and human capital processes and systems that are not connected to allow what Janice is talking about to happen in the federal agencies today. I would say that most of our senior executives in these positions understand this. They just don't have the tools right now to do it. And they're really struggling with how do they take what they have to make it work. And I think some of the calls for reform of civil service, the civil service systems, are a little bit naive in some ways, because no matter what system we have, we're going to have challenges. So I think it's really about looking at what do we have in place? Where are the flexibilities? How do we get the right people leading and supervising and engaging versus creating new systems and new processes?
You know, in the private sector, it's very easy to give someone a chance. We used to call this in big companies, you would get a pushcart project.
Right.
So they'd give you a small, but, you know, you'd have an idea about doing something differently, a new product, a new something, an innovation. You get a tiny little budget, maybe a couple of hours of support, some materials, and you could go for it. If you were successful, that was your job test, because it was a real kind of job test. You might be given a bigger responsibility. In government, it's so much more difficult. Now, I don't think it's impossible. I think it's just a matter of being able to help. And we've done some work in some agencies. Actually help people understand that they have true assets in people which may be severely underutilized. And that said, it would take care of a lot of those calls for civil service reform if we could just show that the same group of people could produce so much more and so much, you know, efficiencies, all the things that may be in their heads, but they're afraid to talk about.
Absolutely afraid to talk about, because one of the things that you hear when you talk to employees about engagement is the fact that innovation is not encouraged. Ideas are not encouraged. Many times doing things the way the status quo is what's expected. And I think employees just get worn down and tired. Now, it's a bit of a change in that we are bringing a lot of younger folks into the organization and government agencies. They come in the door and they look around and they go, what the heck is going on here? So I think we have the ability, I think if we can look at new ways to engage public sector with private sector ideas, really think about how we build partnerships, we might be able to do things a little differently and see some change.
Part of the motivation in the private sector, which is getting curtailed in the federal government, is bonuses or some sort of pay incentives. And the way that Congress has sort of been slashing the budget and trying to get rid of bonuses for senior executives, I think it makes it even more difficult to engage those employees to work hard, to love their job, when they don't have even that small amount, to the extent there was some monetary benefit at the end of the year for a job well done. So what ideas are there out there in light of this new environment where monetary incentives are frowned upon?
Well, one of the things we know is that folks in public service don't come to public service to make big bucks, right? If they wanted to make big bucks, they would move into their own businesses or into other larger type private sector organizations. But what we do know is that feeling that their work is valued is a real key factor for most of the public sector workforce and the federal employees, and quite frankly, the contractor workforce, because often they are, you know, working in these agencies hand in hand with the federal employees and with our military members to conduct the business of this government. So recognition around the importance and the value of their work is absolutely critical. So rethinking some structures where that reinforcement happens, and it can't happen once a year on a piece of paper. It really does need to happen on a regular basis. And when those actions are happening. The other thing that I think that we're looking at, agencies looking at, are really looking at ways to structure things like the teleworking and the time off and the flex locations and team building and matrixing you on different types of projects so that you get more of a breadth of experience versus being in one job, in one position for a very long time without a lot of challenges.
It's true. If you can just align rewards with the way in which a person is contributing, the way that they want to, assuming that they're in the right kind of fit for what they're doing, it becomes less of a problem. If I put my marketing hat on, I think of this almost as a branding problem. When I had my first job, and as I said, this was a very long time ago, right out of college, I actually worked in public service. I worked for one of the largest cities in the world, New York, my hometown. And at that point, still, public service was honorable. It was an honorable job, like teaching or any of the other things that served the public. Now, I think not so much. I think people don't think of it that way. And that's a real loss, because for people who do things out of dedication, having that recognized is so important, down to every single public servant. And when you see our young men and women in their uniforms in the street, I hope you all thank them for serving us all. We do. But, you know, we don't generally think of that in terms of the people who make all of the other stuff that keeps our country running, keeps the wheels on the track, no matter what those jobs are.
Mm-hmm. I want to continue the discussion about these alternative work possibilities, and I think the difficulties in reviewing employees' performance when you don't see the employee. Mm-hmm. after the break. But right now, we're going to take a break. You've been listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And I'm joined again by Dr. Janice Presser and Virginia Gibson. We'll see you after the break.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
And we're back. You've been listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And today I'm joined by Dr. Janice Presser and Ginny Gibson. I wanted to touch on what you had raised earlier about how to engage the workforce with the flex schedules, the virtual offices. I would find it very difficult to then or intra-agency cooperation, mm-hmm. You're sending someone off to work on a joint task force. How do you evaluate their performance? And how does that employee feel that you're fairly evaluating their performance when there's no interaction, at least on a regular basis?
That's true. I think many of our employees and our supervisors feel more comfortable in a very traditional line of sight type of environment. We're all in one office. We have teams of people that are assigned to supervisors and directors and executives, and the chain of command is very visible. But realistically, that's not the way work is happening today, either in the public or the private sector. We have agencies like the General Services Administration that have gone completely to hoteling. So, you know, your office is gone. The administrator sits in a large space in the middle of the executive floor, and people are joining teams and coming in and out of teams. So you take that with a supervisory and leadership team that felt uncomfortable in supervising and giving direction in a very structured environment. You create a matrixed environment with multiple levels of engagement, and it is, quite frankly, confusing most. Okay, and I think it's made it even more of a challenge for employees and supervisors to try to figure out how to communicate with one another. Is it on email? Is it on Skype? Is it on a WebEx? How do we connect? Different time zones, different locations, quite frankly, different cultures. All of those things are critically important to the important communication that has to happen between people, and quite frankly, we haven't really built the infrastructure in our federal agencies in most cases.
And it's so easy, actually, because if you know how someone wants to contribute, you actually know, and if you know the can they do this under stressful conditions, you'll actually know this. So in fact, probably the worst idea that's come up in the private, and the private sector does it too, is motelling for everyone. There are some people who thrive in that whole type of environment, who love working out of home and are much, much more productive that way. And then there are the rest of everyone else, and that's most people, who I like to think of it, they need at least 3.5 walls. Otherwise, they're distracted. You know, that's a well-constructed cube that's, well, at least a little bit more than the space that they can reach with both their hands at the same time. That's a little too small.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes so much more sense. I've seen over my lifetime of working kind of cycles of this. And really, I think it's the people who sell furniture to companies and the government who push this idea of, oh, now we need to change. Now we'll have flexible cube walls, and now we'll have closed-in spaces, and now we'll have open spaces. But the fact is, people differ in the way in which they like to work. And if you only understand that that's related to the way they'll contribute, it actually becomes a very simple thing to set up the kind of pods, whether they're very close to each other or whether they're distributed teams. I've worked on very successful distributed teams that are global. Whenever we do need to do a tech update, I'm on the phone with New Jersey, Brooklyn, New York, and someplace in India. I'm really not quite sure where they are. I only know them by their time zone. And we're all collaborating to make one thing happen. We come together and then we leave. Well, I know it's going to work because, well, they've all been through team ability. So I know a lot about how they want to interact. It also lets me know how I need to reward them. What do they require? Because, yes, we think cash is kind of a universal quantity, but if you think about what glues somebody into their job, often that's not what it is. It's the opportunity to contribute something that's very important to them, maybe even something that they don't even know they have the potential to do. You know, sometimes just having somebody who manages you, who believes in you and gives you that opportunity, mm-hmm. is the biggest reward.
And it's about collaboration. I think that's really absolutely one of the things that we've seen in private sector is this emergence of the new office type environment in which it's collaborative. There's office space, there's collaborative space, there's technology. You come in, people know you're there. You can collaborate across not only your job and your company or your industry, but with others across the entire spectrum of the workforce. And really, that is where some of the younger generation likes to work together.
Right.
I even see it in our office. If you go to some of the areas where some of the more senior folks sit there in individual offices or individual cubes, if you take a look at some of the other folks who are just joining the workforce, they find themselves a big conference room and they plug in their computers and they bring coffee and things to eat in there, and that's where they sit all day, right? So I think it's about really understanding how people collaborate, how they share, and having that flexibility. I think, Janice, you hit on something, is that it's not the idea that having open spaces or having no walls is really the issue, but it's really the fact that I think a lot of this has been done in a free-for-all fashion. And just the idea right. that everybody is going to be okay with the exact right. same way of doing things. And there really aren't folks in a leadership position understanding what do their teams need to be successful.
Right. And, you know, teaming all by itself can be very stressful, particularly for some people, and a total joy for others. The question is, is that the fit for you? Is that the way that you like to work? And, you know, while we might think of it as a generational thing, it actually isn't. There's variation among all people. You know, you tend to think, well, I have to act my age. So if I'm a senior person, I need to have the big office and all of that. And if I'm a young pup, I'll be like, you know, puppies, how they like to play together. They all travel in packs. But that's actually not so. There are people who need to have at least some time during the day that solitude. If we thought, instead of thinking in terms of line of sight and that, we thought about what do we expect people to be delivering? Or can we actually concretize in some way the deliverable? And instead of thinking about how does somebody necessarily do that, you know, which is something we're either going to like or not like, and that will affect the performance evaluation, but we think of instead judging people on, did you produce that report to the acceptable level, if that's their job? Or did you make 90% of your customers satisfied, if you're doing that kind of job? The more that we think of it that way, we can take some of the emotion out of performance reviews, and that hopefully takes some of the anger out when people are not making the mark, because we can encourage them to keep score themselves on the day-to-day basis.
And that's exactly right. I think that's a great way of positioning it, is that really being able to focus on the results and the outcomes. Often when you're in performance evaluation sessions with folks where things are not going so well, it's around, but I worked hard and I was here on the weekend and I jumped in when, you know, so-and-so was ill. And then you look at the bottom line, and when you ask them, well, what was the result of that? What was the outcome of that? That's often much more difficult for folks. And I think shifting from activities and behaviors, actually, to results and outcomes is where we want to help people move, especially in an environment like the federal government, where we don't have quite the flexibilities of a private sector organization, and there does need to be some structure. But I think helping folks understand that, really trying to quantify a little bit about what they've been able to actually impact.
Yeah, I think that moves away from the everyone gets a trophy for trying really hard to you get a trophy if you actually achieve something beneficial, which is how it was when I was growing up.
Right. But, you know, you also can reward teams. There are some jobs that really are done by the individual. And then there's a whole other class of jobs, which the dependence on other people's contribution.
Right.
And it depends on you, is really important. So the jumping in and saving the day because somebody is out sick or something like that is very important in those situations, but can be not so important in others. I have to bring up another thing that just brings to mind, and that is people taking mental health days. This is one of the metrics that gets missed, you know. But if you're in a team-based environment and you're managing in a way that's stressing people out so that they have to take it's really an unplanned absence.
Right.
And
yeah.
I wish people would track this, because I think this is really key for the future of managing people in organizations. If they're that stressed out that they have to do that, there is an impact that is proportionally worse the more other people depend on that person's contribution. And so, you know, again, matching how somebody's going to contribute to what you expect them to do, how they really want to do it, how they're really, really driven, and what they feel is like their mission in life. The more you align that with what you expect them to do, the less they are stressed. So I think if somebody would start counting that, you would see a drop in the use of mental health days, and a drop in those problems that happens when there's a critical deadline and people just bail on it and it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And
you've
seen that
yes,
happen, haven't
I,
you,
I think
Jenny?
You're right. I'm actually thinking about the fact that people are taking those mental health days while they're actually in the office, right? So it's not even that they're just absolutely out of the office that day and missing, but they're unavailable or they're not engaged, or they just, you know, not producing what they need to be able to produce. Why? Because they're fatigued, they're overworked, they're anxious, they're stressed. And those are the kinds of things that are very hard to quantify when you create that passive-aggressive behavior in an organization or a team. And I think that that's one of the things that we were starting to drive to, is that today work has changed so much that it is almost impossible for one person to do one task or one thing independently. And I think that's one of the things that we might want to talk a little bit more about, is how do we work in this new environment?
Okay, and let's do that after the break. We're going to stop right now to hear from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion. I think that's a great turning point to go to. You've been listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explain how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and we're ending our last segment of the show. Ginny, you want to start us off here?
Well, I guess we really wanted to think about what are we trying to do and where are we trying to get folks to? And how are we going to make a difference in this this aspect going forward? We can continue to go down the same path that we've been going with the same kinds of systems, or we can begin to think a little bit differently about how we start to rethink performance assessments, evaluations, engagement, productivity, results. And I think driving more of that impact kind of focus is really where I'd like to see us think about helping our federal colleagues rethink some of these things around coaching and mentoring and really leading. And I think, Janice, you made a point about some outcomes and about work that they're doing. I think sometimes our colleagues are so busy trying to complete the tasks and get the work done, they miss the point about leading the organization and guiding folks.
And thinking about where is it supposed to go in the future? And if you're managing people, how do you get synergy out of them? You know, if you get people together and they start to really interact, one, they're going to enjoy it. That is an engaging thing. But also, that gives you the chance to find new solutions, better solutions, things that people just figure out that make the work much easier. So, you know.
Dr. J, in terms of getting that right balance of managing folks in a team, what do you think about the, what do they call them, 360 performance reviews, where they actually get feedback for being a manager? Or is that, does that tend to be more of a time to
stab
them back?
Yes. I have a very simple performance management system, which I would just love to share with you. I hope someday it will replace the pages and pages of questions. And 360s are just this exactly the same. And I always want to know, more important, who's actually doing the rating? Because human beings don't come with ratings. You know, the only time we really enjoy ratings is at the Olympics when people hold those up. But they have very strict standards. And so that's why they almost always agree. Sometimes the Russian judge doesn't.
Yeah, the Russians.
But, you know, that's okay. But there's a certain agreement. So think about it instead this way. This is the three-question performance review. And it works for managing up or managing down. First question, are you doing enough of what you like to do? Second question, are you doing too much of what you don't like to do? And then the all-important third question, what can we do together to make a difference, to make that different? That's really simple. If the object of doing a performance review is to get you to do better, instead of, you know, to just do the gotcha or have some way to decide who's going to get a raise or an opportunity, we think of everybody as being worthy of being more of who they are and doing more of what they can do, then we're going to think about it in a very different way. And we're going to really want to focus on the most important thing, and the reason why Ginny should be there anyway, is to develop you.
That's right. I think that one of the main things that we want to think about is that work in the federal sector is changing, and that career service type of employment may or may not exist. That building the entire workforce, where you're building from contractors and consultants and federal employees who come in and out of the workforce, those things are really going to drive performance going forward and performance evaluation. And I think when I'm looking at things, I think the one thing that seems to really not happen consistently is clear goals and clear expectations. I think, you know, you say I'd like to have XYZ done. The employee interprets that a certain way. Well, why? Because that communication and that style of how you communicate with one another and the way you describe what the outcomes are often falls apart. So there's one conversation in the beginning of the year, there's another conversation at the mid-year, and there's a third conversation at the end. And left to your own devices for 6 months in between, the picture may look very different at different points in the cycle. So I think that constant communication about what is it we're trying to do together to serve our constituents, which are all of us, you know, citizens of this country, and how are we doing that job in a way that allows the employee to understand the impact. Okay, some organizations are very good at that. They are able to convey corporate goals, progress towards goals, team progress towards goals, individual progress towards goals, but that's not the norm. And I think we have to be thinking about how we can help our colleagues do that just a bit better. And it's really, in my opinion, about collaboration and communication, something that really needs to be focused on.
Yeah, the big C's and creating the innovations and the synergies that are going to drive progress in the direction that we want it.
Right. And we also hear today that this idea about technology is going to solve all of our problems. What we find is technology is great, but technology is going to continue to evolve. And in some ways, that creates even more of a challenge for us in making sure that we're not just relying on technology and distancing ourselves from one another. There needs to be a collaborative and creative process that occurs to have this done in a way that folks feel engaged, valued, and that their work is important.
Well, that goes to the communication. I've noticed everyone does their work by email when they're talking to people. And they decide that that way there'll be no misunderstandings. I find that emails are quick to different interpretations because people write them, you know,
Pretty quickly,
and
on their phones.
Many people have been embarrassed.
Right, and then the reply alls and all that. But I think that leads to the breakdown when you don't see the employee, when all you're doing is talking to them by email. And then the tensions rise between members of your management team or your team below you because they don't understand your expectations. Mm-hmm. I think that's the clarity in the communication. I don't know. I think you're right. Technology can only take us so far. But when we all stop talking to each other, which is what, you know, we have to often remind people in my office, well, pick up the phone and call that person. You know, I'm sorry they're not responding to your emails, but how about just talking to them?
Right. Or in the old days, we actually walked around, right?
Yeah.
We called it management by walking around. Remember, Janice?
Oh, my God. The worst is to get an email from someone who is in the next office, you know. It may be a very old-fashioned word, but, you know, respect is really important. And that was an interesting part of some old research that we did. And in fact, if you just respect somebody in alignment with how they're contributing, you're sending a very positive message. If you think of it, most performance reviews are a negative experience because nobody sees the fives. They only see the, you know, threes or even the fours. Why didn't I get a five on that? Well, I don't know. Do you hang up your halo and wings when you come to work? There's a detriment to that. And it's sad because really good people can often get overlooked who would help us solve problems. And, you know, if you have a different manager who just automatically gives everybody fives, because that's actually easier than actually thinking through how might you help someone, well, you lose opportunity, and we don't want to lose opportunities.
Well, I think that's a good point. The performance improvement plan structure is so formulaic that nobody wants to go down that road.
And negative,
right.
It's not set up to be, okay, what are the things that we're going to work on to help you be you know, better in this job, prepare you for the next job, develop a new skill, add value to our organization. Mm-hmm. It's always, here's something that you don't do well and a skill or a competency that you don't have.
And you must get this done in this short a time frame or you're out of here.
Right.
I mean, it's just a really highly stressful time. And there's a lot of anger going on at that stage.
Do you know what we have in the private industry that's much better than PIPs? We've got a concept called loving them out.
Yes.
And sometimes what you have to do is say to someone, you know, you can't possibly be happy doing this. What would you rather be doing?
Right.
And it's amazing when you start to see their eyes light up and to support that and say, well, how can I help you get what's going to really make you happy in this life? Life's too short to be miserable. People start to rethink what they're doing and plan their own exit strategy.
That's right.
Which is a kind of a happy time was had by all.
That's right.
Yeah, the stress level goes down when
immediately
they feel they have control over their future. And
right.
And also sometimes even just talking with their manager or supervisor, they hadn't thought about things that perhaps they were qualified for.
Right.
We all get into our little tunnel of this is all I can do. And sometimes talking to someone else can open up some doors that you hadn't even thought about.
Absolutely.
So I agree. I just, I do think that people need to take a little more ownership on, as you said, loving them out the door rather than getting kicked out in 90 days after a very negative, sort of stressful performance period where oftentimes they got an excellent the year before.
That's
because
right.
The prior supervisor didn't want to do that and didn't let them know that they had these issues. And then it just all of a sudden, boom, they're faced with losing their job. And I don't know how you're supposed to perform well, you know, at that stage.
It's very difficult at that point.
It's actually, if you are afraid and all that, your stress level is up and your work productivity is going down, not up. So it's really an ineffective and really hurting of human spirit.
Great. So I think what I would just say to folks that have been listening to us today is don't give up. Keep positive.
Yes.
This is not the kind of thing that we can't survive or conquer. That I think that our creative abilities are going to help us through this. The government is in an exciting place in a lot of ways, and they have a lot of opportunities to rethink how things are going to be done and to do things differently in the future. So keep your sense of humor, keep your flexibility, going, and try to have a little bit of fun with this.
And I think for managers, I'm hearing from you is that there shouldn't be any surprises when you give out your performance reviews to your employees, right? You should have been communicating all along.
And also remember our heritage. In America, we changed things. It was called the revolution, but we're advocating revolution now, but we actually change things, and we were able to do that as a nation, and we can do it even in the smallest agency just by thinking of people in a different way.
I love it. I love her optimism. Dr. J wants to start a new revolution.
No. That's
a happy one.
A happy revolution.
The real American revolution.
That's good.
That's all the time we have for today. I really had a wonderful time with you both. Thank you for joining us. Fed Talk is brought to you by the Federal Employment Law Firm at Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend.